I said it before and I'll say it again. Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
For today's episode, I invited Darian Bates to be my guest. Darian is a member of La Tribu, and she is a nutritionist and personal trainer out of Australia. Darian, to me, is the definition of tough as nails. She's the definition of perseverance, and you'll see that in this episode. You know, she'll share a little bit about her story, and she'll get into her struggles that she's had with eating disorders from a young age. But the one takeaway that I want you guys to focus on as you hear her speak and as you hear her share her story is really just perseverance and the ability to not let certain situations define you. She wakes up every day, has struggles like everybody every day, and yet she continues to do what she wants to do, and she follows her passion, which is to really make an impact on people by helping them change their lives through nutrition and through training. And to me, you know, it's a motivation every time I see her posts, because in my eyes, it's almost like I'm willing to bet money on the fact that the majority of people would have already chosen a different career path, especially with dealing with those type of struggles. But yet Darian wakes up again every day, kicks butt, does what she's supposed to do. Does she stumble? Yeah, she stumbles. We all do. But she gets right back up. So I get motivated watching her content, and really just the ability of pushing through. And she's not, you know, she's human like all of us, but to me, she has this superhuman trait of just blocking everything out. And even when it gets as difficult as it does, you know, she still pushes through. So I'm really excited for you guys to listen to this. And again, I want you guys to pay attention to the story, obviously, but more importantly, to have in the back of your head just the word perseverance and the definition of just really wanting to do what you want to do no matter the circumstance. So without further ado, let's get to it. So yeah, so Darian, thank you for being on the show. For all the listeners out there, she is a member of La Tribu. She's been with me for just a little over a month, and I'm excited for this episode because it's a whole other side of fitness and nutrition, right? I call it kind of like the scary side, right? Where people don't really want to talk about those things, but they're everyday things, right? They're everyday life things. So first and foremost, thank you. And for all the listeners that don't know you or don't know about you, go ahead and share a little bit about your story.
So I've been in the fitness industry for going on 6 years now. And that's very much dedicated to sort of personal training and nutrition coaching. I kind of fell into that because I needed some quick cash, to be honest. So I thought PTing was a good way to do that. And then you learn so much more about it. Like you learn that people are trusting you with their lives and, you know, struggles that they've never been able to overcome themselves. And you start taking it a lot more seriously, got a lot more educated along the process. But it all kind of started because when I was 13, I was diagnosed with, when I was 13, I started getting an eating disorder. And when I was 15, I was diagnosed. At 15 years old, I was going to the GP on and off every week, maybe twice a week, and then sent to the emergency room. And that was kind of the routine, go to the emergency unit and then get sent home with a piece of paper with a meal plan on it. Hmm. And that was recurring for a month or two. And then, one time when they sent me home, my mum brought me back about 4 hours later and I had to go into ICU because they couldn't guarantee that my heart would make it the night. Wow. So I ended up going into ICU for 2 weeks and then coronary care for 2 months. And then I went on the eating disorder ward for maybe 4 months. From there, I got out and you go to outpatients. Outpatients is twice a week, and then it goes to once a week, then every fortnight, and they kind of space it out like that until you can manage. Until you get more independent with the eating disorder and you kind of have control over it, and they will space it out. But I never got past the twice a week stage. Hmm. And went back into hospital. When I got out of that admission, I went into the Butterfly Day program, which is like, I probably spent about 8 months in there, which, so instead of going to school, You go there from Monday to Friday in school hours, and you do really only maths and English as far as school's concerned, but you do meditation, journaling, all these kind of self-help programs instead of doing, say, your science or your religion studies or anything like that. And then I was there for 8 months, got out, and then about 2 months later, I was back in hospital for the adult ward. By this point, my mum was very fearful because once you turn 18 here, you're considered an adult. I think it's 21 in the States, but it's 18 here. So once you turn 18, you can't get forced to go into hospital unless you're at harm of, unless you're at risk of harming yourself. So unless you're suicidal, which I guess, like, you know, eating disorder is self-harm, but you're not at, I talked about it, but I wasn't suicidal.
Okay.
And then, yeah, so my mom was very fearful of getting to that age because she's like, well, then how do I get help for her? Like, once she hits 18 and I'd have no control whether or not she goes in or she stays home, how do I help her? But I remember my mom used to do these baby hands and feet sculptures. So she used to have parents come in all the time with their babies, and she'll do like little sculptures for them. Okay. And this mom came in once and said that she had an eating disorder. And my mom sat down with her for a few hours and talked about me and my experience. And the lady said to her, she will change when she's ready. And I think that was a huge flip around for my mom. And my mom just started to accept that there is no quick fix to this. And this is something that she's going to live with for her whole life. And we can't rush a recovery or rush treatment. And that was kind of like there did come a point when I turned maybe 19 where I decided I wanted to turn things around. And so I did. And then I slowly gained weight in about 20. 20 was probably my best year, where I was more orthorexic. So orthorexic is where you have a systematic approach to all your dieting. You see it a lot in bodybuilders and things like that, and there's a huge fear around foods that you would deem harmful. So it was kind of like that, but at least like I was healthy and I was training a lot and I was getting stronger, I was gaining weight. When it turned 21, it turned into binge eating and then bulimia. So I would binge eat for a few hours and then I'd purge. And I kind of suffered with that for maybe 2 years, every day, for hours each day, and it kind of shut off my whole life. Recently, I had more control over it, but then with COVID on, it kind of did the whole flip.
Right.
And things got a lot worse. But yeah, sort of backtracking from that, the reason I got into the health industry was because, like, I did really well in school. But because I was so sick, I ended up missing out on year 12 altogether. And my whole aspiration growing up was to be like a doctor because I had all these good, you know, good grades in science. And, you know, I thought that's what you're supposed to do. And when I missed out on year 12, I was like, well, the best next option is to go get my nursing diploma. So I started nursing and then I did my aged care and I realized that I didn't enjoy that. I didn't enjoy taking care of people. A huge respect for people that do that because I don't. It just wasn't for me, though. I guess I'm not compassionate enough for it. But then I kind of looked at it and I was like, well, how can we prevent people getting from this stage where they do need care?
Right.
And that was through education. And that's sort of where my mind flipped. And I was like, well, the only way that I'm going to help myself is by starting to get educated and learning how my body works so that I have like almost facts to counteract what the eating disorder is saying.
Right.
And that was, yeah, how I got into the health industry and PTing and then nutrition.
Wow. So if we can take a step back, and what's the, I guess, the thought that goes through your head, right, when it's like, okay, well, you're diagnosed with an eating disorder. What's the initial thought? I mean, obviously, is it a relief because you've been diagnosed and, like, you can get treated? Or is it more of a scary feeling of doubt? Like, am I going to be stuck with this for the rest of my life?
Yes, that's such a good question. Because at first, so the first admission, I was very like, I don't have an eating disorder. I'm fine. Leave me alone. Let me do what I want to do. I was bullied in school, not because of my appearance or my weight or anything, but I was just, I guess I was a nerdy kid. And I think I just, this was like one thing that I was like, oh, if I look good, like I probably won't get bullied anymore. And I just was like, can everyone leave me alone and let me just get skinny and look good? And then like school will be so much easier and life will be so much easier and this will solve all my problems. So the first sort of year, I was very young, so very kind of immature approach to it. But I remember like hitting my mom because she was trying to get me to hospital, and I like would full smack her and just really get aggressive because I just wanted everyone to leave me alone. In hospital, it was really hard just because of the way that you treated, like even showering, you have a nurse in there watching you shower in case you A, exercise or B, harm yourself. So it was very demoralizing, and it was kind of just, you know, going, it was 15, I was going through puberty, I didn't want anyone looking at me. And then as I got older, so probably when it came to getting out of the eating disorder and got, out of the Butterfly Day program and going into the adult ward for eating disorders, it was a huge relief. It was almost like I'm so out of control and I just feel like I'm not getting any better and I want to change. That when I went into hospital, it was like, great, now it's out of my hands. Like, there's nothing else I can do. They're going to treat it. And then, but then you kind of have this false hope that when you walk out, everything will be fine.
Right.
That's not how it works.
Right. So when you get treated, you know, if we want to use those terms, is it a strict thing, almost like a specific, because I know you mentioned that, you know, you get kind of like an eating plan or you get a meal plan and all that. Like, so it's specific as like what you're going to eat, when you're going to eat it, and obviously how much you're going to eat? Or is it like, this is what you can eat, almost like a flexible option type thing?
I'm not sure how the healthcare system works in America, but here when we go into hospital and they'll send you the meals for the day and you kind of tick which ones you want. So okay. It was because we were in hospital, it was like that, but it would be the nurses would then write on it, like, say, depending on what tier we were in our meal plan, it would be like, if we tick sweet potato for our carbs, it would be sweet potato times two.
Okay.
Or yeah, so we would get extra food than everyone else. Lucky us.
right.
I guess, you start off on like tier one and then you go up. But like there's a lot of dangers that I think are associated with that, just because like we know when people are so malnourished, the size of their heart shrinks, which drops your blood pressure so low that when you get this refeeding, and like I said, it's quite a lot of food, like we're timesing things by two or three or whatnot, and then plus snacks that no one else gets. And your heart can't actually handle the extra volume from all that food, that it can cause a heart attack. So I started getting like heart palpitations and arrhythmias and things like that. There's definitely stuff, but it's so strict. Like they do this thing called strict bed rest where you're not allowed off the bed. And that probably lasts until maybe, I think I got off strict bed rest after like 4 months in hospital. So that meant that I couldn't even have my leg off the bed. Like if I had my leg hanging off the side of my bed, God forbid I was swinging it back and forth, like that wasn't strict bed rest. I had to be stationary on the bed. If I wanted to brush my teeth, I was put in a wheelchair and wheeled to the sink. If I wanted to eat, because they got us to eat at a table, the table, I kid you not, was 2 meters away from my bed. I wasn't allowed to walk. To hop in the wheelchair to go 2 meters to the table.
I can imagine. I mean, obviously there's a physical struggle there, but I can imagine the mental struggle too, right? Like you said, there's a table 2 meters away. I could just take a couple steps and I'm there, and not being able to do that. So the restriction of it, I can imagine, just messes with your mindset of the ability to overcome, right? Take us through, you know, which we're going to get into a little bit more, but, you know, you recently just finished a 15-day challenge, if you want to call it, right, where you were posting daily videos of the process. So share a little bit about that and, like, how that came about and what your goal was for that.
So it was 15 days because, like I said, Corona came around, and I had 12 hours to sort of pack up what I knew to do every day. So like my whole day was spent at the gym training myself, training other people, interacting with people, like was how my day was set up. And when Corona hit, we had 12 hours to turn that upside down and sort of go, okay, well, this is the new plan. And with that, I felt very out of control and I almost didn't want to deal with it, that I shut off by starting to binge again. So binging and purging. And what just like my process of going through it is I get this huge dopamine hit. And I actually like, I love the feeling of just shutting everything else and being consumed in the food. And like, cause a lot of people are like, that's, and I think that's part of the reason why it's so hard to change. Cause it's so satisfying in that moment that it's like, it's, you know, any drug addict, like when they take that drug, it's like, fuck, like this is what I needed.
Yeah, that initial high.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear.
Yeah, you are. It's fine. Okay.
And then, so I decided that I wanted to change it and I wanted to put it out there and show what was happening. I did a podcast with Jordan Syatt who said that, you know, once we voice our insecurities, we take the power that they have over us.
Right.
So I just said, like, this is what I'm going through, and I hugely believe that. So I said, this is what I'm going through. This is my struggles. And I put out a challenge to sort of say that this isn't about the food. Like, I don't dislike vegetables and I don't dislike, you know, salads and things like that. Like, I actually really like them. And that's not the reason why I binge on certain foods all day. It's nothing, like, yeah, to show that it's something that's common. It's not normal, but it's so common and people need to speak about it. And to show people that they're not alone. Like, I think even just you probably had some friends that have struggled with binge eating or purging before. I definitely know some people like it, and there's books about it. Like, how can you be alone? Like, there's stuff written about this. But just no one talks about it. And I think there's a huge disconnection because the rate of, well, in Australia, eating disorders, if someone has an eating disorder, they're 6 times more likely to die than any other psychiatric disorder. But there's only 37 hospital beds in Australia. And still no one really understands how to deal with eating disorders. And it's like, well, then why? Like, why is this taking so long to get these processes in place?
Right.
And it's because no one talks about it. No one voices that these are real issues going on. So I decided that I was going to put it out and I was going to do 15 days of not binging or purging. And just document everything. I guess, like, as far as, like, fears go, my biggest fear was, like, we've spoken about before, is my cheeks getting really puffy.
Right.
And they actually didn't. They didn't get that bad. So that was really good.
The positive side.
Yeah. I was like, when I was doing the videos, I was like, this isn't going to last very long when my cheeks start puffing up. Videos are going.
So going through that, I mean, what's been the overall reaction from people that obviously followed you? And so, I mean, obviously I follow you and obviously I sent messages off with, you know, because I truly believe in the power of sharing, right? And I believe in sharing will open the doors and shed light on other people that are going through similar things and that for some reason or other obviously feel kind of singled out or feel like they're out on an island by themselves and no, I guess, way to turn. But I mean, what's been the reaction that you've heard? And also, like, if you were to go back and actually, let's go for that one first. Like, what's been the reaction, the overall reaction that you've had from that?
So the thing that shocked me the most at the start is that I had 3 or 4 of my own clients message me and tell me that they're struggling, not to like a binge eating. One is like to the binge eating degree that I was almost to the point that I was at, but she wasn't bulimic, so she wasn't purging. She was just binge eating. And then some, about 3 other clients said, like, they're going through episodes of binge eating where they just feel out of control. I wouldn't say that they suffer with binge eating disorder, but there's elements of it. And to me, like, that was a huge shock because I was like, well, why didn't you feel comfortable to tell me about this before?
Right.
And they just didn't know that I was going through it. And then as soon as I said, like, this is what I'm coming out with, this is what's happening, because I shared it with all my clients before I shared it on social media because I didn't want to almost shock them and I wanted [S2] Right. [S1] To be as honest as I could with them. And they said, yeah, and then 4 came out and said, I'm struggling with it too. So that was a huge eye-opener for me. And I was like, wow, like, I really need to be communicating about not to put my issues onto my clients, but I really need to be showing them that this is okay.
Right.
And people go through this. I had a few people reach out to me on social media that never spoken to before but wanted to do the challenge with me. And just everyone's acceptance of it. Like, I think I got 1 negative comment. Apart from that, like, everyone was just always you know, saying how great it was and, you know, telling me that I've got this. And from people that you don't speak to that have no reason to do it, it's just that little bit more appreciated, like that they've gone out of their day to put that comment out there and they have no reason to.
Right, right. What would you say is, I guess in your opinion, because we all hear about like emotional eating, right? And we hear about, you know, when someone is depressed and they turn to food, to eating, you know, and that's kind of how they mask their feelings, or that's how they make themselves feel better in that time frame. Do you consider that could be an eating disorder if someone does that, I guess, like in a cyclical fashion, to where, let's say, every 2 weeks they fall into this, whether it's depression or certain emotional state, that they turn and to eating? Do you think that's considered, would that be an eating disorder as like binge eating?
I think like there's a few points there. So like there's eating disorder and then there's disordered eating. Mm. So like I think like if you're clinically diagnosed with an eating disorder, it's more obsessive and it's more compulsive. And there's a lot more associated to it. So like there's rigid rules and false beliefs and all these kind of other things, where I think disordered eating is more like you're very aware and you don't have these false beliefs around food or body image or, you know, there's a systematic approach to everything, that then it is just a little bit of disordered eating. And I think it's just a poor relationship with food. But I think that also comes from like, you know, things are a lot more processed. Like, you know, there's glutamate in a lot of foods, which makes them more addictive. There was a study done where Domino's ratings went down a bunch. And so then they added more cheese to their pizza because the lactate in the cheese was highly addictive and their ratings went all the way up. So it's like there's things that, you know, to the producers of these products are putting in our food to make them more addictive. But I think like that's a clear definition a difference that needs to be made, is that if you go out for dinner and you overeat and then you still have a cheesecake at the end, like that's just overindulging.
Right.
You know, binge eating is compulsive and it's repetitive and there's this lack of control. I could go out to a meal with my friend and eat the exact same amount, but it's my thought process behind it. Like I'm eating this pizza and, you know, these arancini bowls and whatnot and, you know, and then ice cream, because my focus is to get through this food so then I can run to the bathroom and then throw it up. Hmm. You know, whereas their process is like, fuck, this is a really good pizza.
Right,
I love
right,
this
right.
ice cream.
Right,
know? Yeah.
Right. Wow. So what, I mean, if you could describe it, I mean, what's the feeling that comes when you say, because, you know, you don't have, obviously we have our week of call and we've discussed how, like, you almost kind of like plan for it, right? Like you mm-hmm. designate a certain amount of time. And what I found very interesting was, which, I mean, a lot of this was new because I never really, I guess, talked about it that much about it. But when you say, well, I didn't do it because I didn't have enough time, right? Or, you know, like I block out this amount of time for my binging and purging. And so I guess, you know, for the listener, for the average listener that doesn't know, like what goes through your thought process, or what's your thought process when you're like, you're actually planning ahead for this? Because for instance, for me, naive, you know, being so naive, I just thought it was something that kind of just hit you, right? And it's like, well, I'm going to eat right now. I'm going to eat. Mm-hmm. And then in my belief, it was that once you're finished eating, you feel so bad about eating that that's when you purge, right? So for you, like, describe how that process goes.
And I'm not sure if it is the same for everyone. Like, I do still get those, like, impulses, but then sometimes, like, a day that I plan to go really well will end up being, like, a binge eating day. But that's really rare for me, and I think that's just because of the control that I have from the anorexia, where I was like, you know, I could go days with eating so little. That, like, I don't really get those impulses, but I think it's I think your brain, I describe it as at one point, like this binge eating served me. I was going through a rough stage and just being able to lose myself in food served me, and it made me feel better, and it kind of got rid of all that anxiety and that anxiousness and, you know, this depressed and overwhelming feeling. Then my brain quickly clicked onto that and was like, okay, well, this is what we need to do to make you feel better.
Hmm.
And so I think like that's why I look forward to these days and why like I block out those days was because I know for me it feels good. And I think that's where like I would plan out the whole day. Like the whole day would be rid off. I don't take any phone calls. I don't talk to anyone and that like I'm going to be binging and purging that day. Whereas the other days, like I'm completely fine. Like no one would know anything was wrong. And that's when, yeah, I said like, if I can block out time, like if I have things I need to do with places that I need to be, there is no time for it. So then I won't designate that day doing it.
Wow. So is it safe to say that you would plan your days according to the binging and purging?
I think I would do it the other way around. So I think like I would make sure that when I'm booking everything in, I keep 1 or 2 days free, but that day would be dependent on who I had to meet or who I had to talk to or who I had to catch up with. And then the other day would be the binging.
Okay.
But I would prioritize making sure that I got it in.
That you got it in. And for the binging side of it, are there particular foods that
you use
or...
Because I know that I'm bulimic, so I will binge and purge. Purging is really hard for certain foods. Like, it makes it very hard to grow up without sort of, like, I actually, I haven't told anyone this before, but I actually got a hematoma in my eye once because I ate something and I wanted to throw it up, and it was so hard to throw up that I ended up popping a blood vessel in my eye. So, like, I had this blood burst, like, I could see fine, but all the white in my eye was completely red, and it lasted for months.
Wow.
I told everyone that I did it deadlifting because I've heard that people can do it deadlifting training. So I was like, yeah, that's a good excuse. and then sometimes like if I am really straining, I get like little pop blood vessels in my face, and my face will become like a little spotty and red. I tend to go for things that are like dairy based because they're easier to throw up.
Wow.
And pretty much like it's just a process of eating until I can't anymore because like my lungs are squished by my stomach, and then I'll purge and then I'll go back. And I cycle through that maybe 5 or 6 times. And then by then like I'm so dehydrated and tired that I just need to lie down and have a nap. And then it becomes like when I wake up again, it's almost like this fear of, oh, you can't do this again for another 3 or 4 days. Wow. So then I'll start again.
Wow. And for that, like, how much time is that from the moment you start to you're essentially like right before you're going to take a nap? I mean, what's that binging and purging time frame look like?
Probably 3 hours.
3 hours. Wow. So it could, I mean, it really does take control of, I mean, to a certain extent, your schedule, right? Because like once you start, has there ever been a point where you start and let's say you've blocked off these 3 hours and I don't know, something came up after binging and you can't purge?
Yeah. It's happened a couple of times where like someone showed up, whether it was unannounced or, and I've kind of had to stop, but I always make an excuse to sort of run out and go somewhere else to purge. Like I've never had the point where I've had to sit there with it. And like, that's probably the scariest thing I could ever imagine doing at the moment.
Right. Just having, being stuck in that state for an extended period of time. Wow. So with this 15-day challenge, the first question I have about that specifically is like, if you were to go back, knowing what you know now from those 15 days, if you were to go back and do it all over again, would you do anything different?
There was a few times where like I was really upset and I just didn't feel like I wanted to jump on social media at that stage. Like I tried to sum it up as best I can, but I think because I'm not, like I'm used to talking about eating disorders in this kind of context where I'm not in it and I'm not emotional about it, but like in that moment, it is hard to talk about. And I just, I wish I was a little bit more honest about that stuff. Like there was days where I kind of like, and to be honest, I kind of treated people like shit because I didn't want to talk to people. I felt really shit within myself and, you know, I was very short with them and very frustrated. But you didn't really see that. And I think like that's something that should have been voiced a little bit more, is that like, it gets to some stages where I, I don't want to communicate with anyone. And then when people try to be nice to me, it's like, stop being nice to me. I'm in a shit mood.
Right, right. So I guess the next thing is, so what, I mean, where do you go from here? I mean, where do you go as far as, you know, what's next for, I mean, the 15 days are over, right? You got through that. And is it safe to say that you haven't binged and purged since?
Yeah, I haven't. The 15th day, that was actually harder than, so that was on Monday. And yesterday was like the first day after the challenge. The 15th day was actually harder than the day after. And I think that was just because I was so scared. I didn't know what was going to happen the next day. And that was probably like the worst day out of the whole thing.
Hmm.
But I didn't binge or purge or anything like that, but I just felt so out of control of my emotions and so short-tempered and nothing was going right. I think I cried like 3 times just because, like, you know, my computer wouldn't load. And I was like, what?
Right.
What happened to me? Everything bad happens to me. And then I ended up, yesterday was much better, but I suppose going forward, like, I've told loved ones around me that I don't want that expectation that this isn't going to happen again, mm-hmm. because I'm sure it will. I'm sure I'm going to blow up, but I don't want to put that expectation on that I'm almost like not allowed to, because I want to feel like when I do, I can tell them,
right,
this is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I want to talk about it, I can talk about it. If I don't want to talk about it, I don't have to talk about it. But I don't want that expectation that, because that it would never happen again, but I'm going to try and just go for as long as I can. And then if it slips up, I know that I'm only 1 meal away from getting back on track.
Hmm. So getting back on track, you know, perfect segue is into that is, so how do you get back on track? So let's just say, you know, hypothetically that you go another 15 days, right? And then, like you said, you blow up for whatever reason and you do it, right? What is it when you say I get back on track?
So I got this one from John's side again. John puts out a lot of good information, and not that he's had, like, he suffered with binge eating, but he didn't have sort of to the degree that I have, but a lot of the stuff still resonates. And one thing that he says is, like, you can't fuck this up.
Hmm.
So a lot of people will, two things that they do is that once they fuck up, like, they just let it take over their whole week or the whole day or whatever it might be. Whereas, and some people associate food as good or bad. And as soon as you associate it as good as bad, of good or bad, then when you eat that quote unquote bad food, that's when you feel like you fucked up and it goes into this negative cycle and it just keeps going, going, and going.
Right.
And so, like, there's two things there where, like, you shouldn't say good or bad. Anything is bad in too much. If you eat too much of one thing, it's bad food. So I think he kind of puts it in the words that, like, if you do go into this negative cycle where you just keep going and going and going, the only way to stop that is by having one more meal and getting back on track.
Hmm.
So, like, you know, it takes, you say, if my dinner was meant to be kangaroo with sweet potato, like, all I have to do is eat that and then I'm back on track.
Okay. And it's funny you just mentioned the kangaroo, because I actually have been getting, you know, when I repost your stuff, people follow you, and then all of a sudden they're like, because you put on your meals and it's like, oh, I'm eating kangaroo. And, you know, for obviously
really eat kangaroo.
Right. And, you know, for the listeners that you know, that don't know, you know, obviously Darian lives in Australia, and you know, for us here in the States, it's obviously not a normal thing. So
yeah.
You know, whenever you're just taking a picture of your meal and it's no big deal. But for us here, we're just kind of like, she's gonna have kangaroo, that's crazy.
But, isn't that on our coat of arms?
Yeah, right.
We've actually got too many kangaroos here. I think there's more kangaroos than people at the moment. And
wow.
We're trying to, they're very lean. Like, when you get the pack, I'll have to send you a photo, but when you get the pack, like, it's just pure red meat.
Wow.
Yeah, they're very lean, they're very tender, and they're very good for you. So they're yum.
Yeah. How is the taste of it? I mean, how is it compared to, like, beef?
You undercook it a little bit, because okay. If you overcook it, it gets, like, too chewy.
Okay.
But it's much more succulent than beef, so that's why I like it. It's, like, a lot more juicy.
Wow, definitely have to try that. So yeah. So I guess, you know, getting back to it, what's, I mean, What is, I guess, your next goal within like the binge eating category? And what I mean by that, like the binging and purging, is, I mean, what's your goal for whether it's like outreach or like advocacy or, just being another voice, trying to champion, obviously helping people getting through it? I mean, what's your thought process on that?
I think I just want to kind of create this safe place where people can feel like they can talk about their struggles, because people always ask me like, how do we implement early intervention? Like, how do we catch this early? And it's almost like you can't until they realize that something's wrong. And the only way that people are going to recognize that something's wrong is that we start talking about it and showing them like, this isn't something that you need to hide.
Right.
And I think that's something that happens with eating disorders is, like, particularly for me, when I started off with anorexia and the restrict. So I still got anorexia, but I've got binge eating anorexia, whereas like the other ones, the just restricting binge, anorexia, which is what it started off with. And when I had that, people started picking up on my habits. Like, if I went to the food court, and normally I would get Macca's with all my friends, but all of a sudden I was getting like just a plain salad. And if people start picking up on those behaviors, then I start isolating myself from them. Well, they call me out on it, and I don't want to feel weird, so I'll
Right.
just not go. And I feel like the more that we keep kind of making people feel like it's not okay to talk about it, the more that they're going to shut it off, and then the more the eating disorder can kind of sneak in and take in, have control over all these other aspects.
Right. So on the I guess education part of it, do you think it is as simple as just talking about it and creating that space, or do you think it's viable to start thinking about like next steps as far as like like some type of program where it's just constantly providing information, education, and all that on it?
Yeah, I think there definitely needs to be some kind of program and something that's not, I don't think like maybe, so the Butterfly Day program was like Monday to Friday. I don't think anything like that. Like, I think it's important that we still let them socialize with their friends and get to do all these things, and not shut them off from school. But I think by allowing easier access to the program and making it more readily available to girls or boys going through it. But like, as far as like treatment care goes, like I could go on for, not hours, but like at least 1 hour about things that I think like the medical system should be doing differently. But I don't, yeah, I think that the only way that we're going to catch this early is by just bringing more awareness to it. And that's what I'm hoping to do. Like, just by talking about it on my social media, like I'll get more confident talking about it the more that I do it, sharing more stuff. And then hopefully if it's me or it's someone else, if it's a friend or family, that someone sees it and goes, okay, I need to talk about it. I'm not well.
Right. What do you have to say to, obviously your nutritionist, your personal trainer, to someone that would say, well, because I'm pretty sure you've run through this thought process in your head, or this thought is, like why haven't you been able to get a hold of it, being that you are a nutritionist and you are a personal trainer,
Yeah, and I think that was like a big reason why I didn't talk about it, was because there's like whole imposter syndrome around it. But I don't think like anyone's ability to help others comes down to their own experience, or it might even better it. Like, if I've been through it, then I know what it's like. It's almost like if you're a coach and you've never had a coach, you don't know what it's like to be coached.
So, pushing that a little bit further, because I get that all the time, right? Is and it's usually the simple question is just how do you find the right coach, right? How do you find the right trainer? How do you find and I always go back to, they obviously that coach or that trainer or that even that doctor, right? Like they have to have some type of experience well within that realm, right? Or whatever topic that is that they're talking about or pushing. And to me, especially when it comes down to coaching, it's always been this kind of this tug of war of what other people think coaching should be, right? And what I think coaching should be based off of the coaching experience that I've had, right? So I think with you, in conversations with you, I think it's been pretty clear of what the goal is in, within your coaching business and your coaching goals, and how I think, when we actually just discussed it before we started recording, of like your true power is really like you've gone through the thick and like the lows of those struggles, and that's where somebody that's, you know, dealing with the same situation can really pull from, you know, your experience, right? More than anything that you could read in a book, more than anything that you could study or learn from somebody else, right? There's nothing like actually going through it and being able to share that story. And the connection that comes with that is like, it's even like an unspoken connection, right? Because even just knowing that somebody has gone through it and is feeling what you're feeling, that's enough.
Yeah, I think like I'm a huge fan of boxing, and like I used to compete. And so I like to, I think there's so many analogies or comparisons that we can make to boxing. And when you're in that, like that ring, would you be taking advice from someone that had never been in the ring and never had a fight? And then opposedly, would you take, you know, do you think that Floyd Mayweather is the best coach? Or do you think the people that have made mistakes and had losses and learned from that are the best coaches? Like, right. I'm sure his coaches had losses.
Right.
And that's what maybe what makes him so good. I think there's many other things that make him so good, but
right.
You know what? I mean, the people, even like Freddie Roach, like he wasn't a great boxer,
mm-hmm.
but he's such a good coach.
Mm-hmm.
And because like he fucked up, like he learned from it and he grew from it. And then he was able to take that and educate other people on it. And I don't think it comes down to like, you have to be perfect at everything to be able to show people how to be perfect.
Right. Right. So, you know, to wrap it up, I wanted to give you an opportunity to share your where people can reach you, right? And I think this is going to be, you know, I'm excited when this episode comes out, because again, it's a topic that is kind of in the shadows the majority of the time, right? And a lot of struggles really are. Nobody really wants to talk about the struggles. Nobody really wants to talk about those dark times that you go through. But that's for myself, you know, speaking from my personal experience, that's when like the biggest connections are made. And even if it's just to know that somebody out there, somebody else, right, is dealing with it or going through it, and you know, where can people reach out and one, find information from you, and I mean, obviously, you know, whether it's coaching that they need, programming that they need, nutrition that they need, where can they find you?
So on Instagram, it's at Coach Darian Bates. And if you go through my highlights, I have the whole 15 days on there. My website's www.dazzspt, so dazzspt.com. Now, if anyone does have, like, eating disorder issues, I've got a member portal, which is, like, for my clients. They get free access to all the webinars and stuff that I've put out. But I'm happy to send them. I did one on eating disorders, and I'm happy to send that to them if they are struggling, and they can reach out to me and give me a call or chat about anything. And I have an ebook that's at the moment getting published. So that's all on eating disorder too, and that'll be coming out soon.
Perfect. Awesome. And obviously I'll put all this information in the detail notes. So people could just click on it and obviously send them direct to your sites and to get all that information. I've seen it, and of course I'm a believer. I've seen everything you've done, and I'm always, you know, being in somewhat the fitness industry with the gym and just training, you know, I've told you this, it's impressive, you know, to see you train, you know, at your size, and then you hear the stories, right, of like the eating disorder and all that, and it's like something doesn't connect seeing the visual of you training and then hearing the stories. But again, thank you for being on here, and you know, I've said it before, but I'm proud of you for stepping out and really showing, again, those dark times, right? And as raw and uncut as it could be, without a doubt, I mean, it's going to leave an impression on somebody. And obviously, if the goal is to bring more attention to it, then you're well on your way.
Thank you so much.
I said it before and I'll say it again. Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while. You could miss it.